Hello, we couldn't help but wonder, listeners. Seeing as we have a while before And Just Like That is back, Elise and I wanted to give you a listen to another project we've been working on. We couldn't help but wonder, still wondering. There, we discuss New York City-based rom-coms like When Harry Met Sally, You've Got Mail, Hitch, Trainwreck, Bros, Serendipity, Ghost. We cheat a little bit with Sleeps in Seattle, but also bonus episodes where we answer questions and do quick breakdowns of films like An Affair to Remember. We break them into 3 to 4 episodes, so the first episodes that we're going to share here are not spoilery at all. We hope you enjoy. Welcome to Still Wondering, Brown Sugar, Part 1. All right, hey, Elise Castle, how's it going?
Hey, Mike Jensen, I'm good. You have fear in your eyes.
I am having some technical difficulties, but we're gonna just keep going and hope that it works out, and I might have some creative editing to do, but we're gonna get through this, because we're ready to go.
We are ready to go. Really quick butthole that's not, like, that exciting, but it's exciting for me and Mike Jensen. I found the Sleepless in Seattle soundtrack that Mike was talking about.
Yes, and I realized why I couldn't find it is that it doesn't have the words Sleepless in Seattle anywhere in it.
No,
it does have the words Sleepless.
It does. It probably doesn't have that because of copyright issues.
Sure.
It's like back in the day when my mom would buy me a CD and it would be like songs inspired by a movie with a sea creature. And you're like, what is
sure.
this? She's like, it's a Little Mermaid. And I'm like, but is it? Yeah, it's something along the lines of like more sleep or...
I think it's more songs for sleepless nights or something like that.
Yeah.
And I definitely have memories of that. I can hear Carly Simon singing My Funny Valentine.
Yeah, that was what you, hold on. I have it right here because I sent it to you. It's called More Songs for Sleepless Nights. Has Jimmy Durante, Carly Simon, My Funny Valentine. You were not a fan of Brian Ferry's These Foolish Things.
It's just so weird. Have you listened to it?
No.
He's like, like, it's real. I'm like, what is that? And maybe that, I don't know that actor, that performer, like maybe that's his style of things. But I remember being like, what is happening?
I like that. If you want to do that again at any point, we can. All right, so we are here today to talk about Brown Sugar.
Yeah, we're talking about Brown Sugar, and I feel like I need to say two things. I need to Taye Diggs say two things right up front.
Taye Diggs.
This is the film of which I have been the least familiar. I have never seen this film ever in my entire life until watching it for this podcast.
I think I saw it, but then as I was watching it, I was like, I don't think I saw it. And then there's a couple moments where I'm like, no, I saw this. As we all know, I don't do well with remembering movies I've seen. I think I probably saw this in high school, like when it had just came out and it was at a sleepover. And maybe I was like telling my friends about Les Mis at the time. Like
sure.
It was probably at a party, I think, in the background. Yeah, like I literally just told someone in full confidence that Tori Amos was currently starring in Hadestown and they should go see it. Guess who's starring in Hadestown right now?
Not Tori Amos. Annie DeFranco? Is that
what
you're going for?
Come on. They're that's similar.
I suppose they function in the same world-ish.
Yeah.
Kind of. So the other thing that I have to say right up front is that I am not a hip-hop person.
Okay.
And in fact, one of the things that I was reading about this as we were deciding on films to do and why originally we weren't going to do this is that I read one review of like, if you don't get hip hop, you're not going to get this film. And so I was like, well, okay, I guess we won't do that. And then we kind of heard from enough people and like we had kind of looked into it to be like, I think that will be okay. I think.
Yeah.
So I am certain there are hip hop things that I'm not going to get. There are probably even things that I will say wrong, though I have tried I've done a lot of research. I've watched all the commentary. I've looked into things. So I don't think that I'm going to embarrass myself. But just putting that out there, hip hop is not my world.
Well, as we know, my world is mostly musical theater. So yes. But also what I want to say, what I liked, and I'm sure you'll get into this more, and what I thought was really cool was one of the reasons why they wanted to make this film was that they wanted to show another side of hip hop that wasn't just violence, because that is what was kind of happening and wasn't just like anger and violence. And they wanted to show how hip hop can be used for relationships and love.
And I do know that hip hop is a very specific language, and in that it was created in my lifetime. It was maybe before your lifetime, but like, you know, we're just celebrating, is it the 40th anniversary of hip hop? And you know, I'm 40 something years old, so mm-hmm. I've been around for that, you know. So I know it's like a modern language. I also know that it speaks to, it spoke and speaks to people who felt that music wasn't speaking to them. So I do know that there's that specificity of it, but I do think there's a larger sense to be said simply about music and the music that speaks to us. No, 50 years of hip hop. So I guess I just missed the beginning of it.
For those of you who can't see our podcast, I'm currently showing Mike my New York Public Library limited edition 50 years of hip hop card. Yeah. So that's all.
So that said, I guess we'll kind of dive right into it. I don't have quite as much of history of this one. I do have a few things, and there was commentary from both the director and the editor. So I do have some behind the scenes. Brown Sugar. So this story was by Michael Elliott with a screenplay by Michael Elliott and Rick Famuyiwa, directed by Rick Famuyiwa. For the record, Michael Elliott had written Carmen, a hip opera, and Like Mike. Rick Famuyiwa had written and directed a film called The Wood. This is only his second film. So I do know that the producer, Peter Heller, had worked with Michael Elliott on Like Mike and had brought his script for this film to the director, Rick, who would end up doing a bit of a rewrite, which is why they're credited separately with the and credit. And I will now read the DVD description. A hot ensemble cast featuring Taye Diggs, Sanaa Lathan, Queen Latifah, and Mos Def shines in this romantic comedy about love and laughter in the world of hip-hop. Sydney and Dre are childhood friends who share a passion for music and an unsung love for each other. But when Dre marries the wrong woman, Sydney must make her move or risk losing her soulmate forever.
We were just talking about Carmen, a hip opera, the other day at work.
Oh, were you?
Yeah.
I remember it being a thing. It was Beyonce, right?
Yeah. Because we were talking about J-Lo's new movie video thing.
This
I haven't seen it yet.
This is me now.
I have not
like
seen it. And then everyone was like, Carmen, a hip opera, that was it.
Interesting. I'd be curious to go back and watch it. Now, I don't really know the story of Carmen all that well.
Well, you will when you go back and watch Carmen.
Yeah.
Yeah. Did it say in your commentary at all that when this movie was being discussed, that it was mentioned that it was a Harry Met Sally type, a When Harry Met Sally type?
We have references,
okay,
for sure.
Okay, cool. Because I don't know how much I didn't do a ton of background because I know that's usually what you do. So I wanted to make sure that they brought that up.
They definitely mention it. And obviously it's there. Like, we have these people who are friends. And I do think that we're going to get to this subject and, you know, we can talk about it more then. But the subject of can a man and a woman just be friends, which is kind of what the basis of that, obviously, and this film is. And in both cases, the answer seems to be no. But we can have our separate conversation. We do start with the 7 train. And then we quickly cut to a couple of red birds, which is what those red trains were called. I have random trivia on them. They were the color gun red after David L. Gunn, who was the president of the metro system back then. They were used to combat graffiti, and they were phased out by 2003.
Yeah, I'd never seen them or heard of them. So they must have been like a very specific time period. They probably weren't there that long.
Now, they came about in the 80s. Once again, it was because of all the graffiti that was happening.
Right.
So it was to try to cut down on that. I don't know how it cut down on that. I'm not sure if they were just easier to clean. But yeah, they were gotten rid of within, you know, close to 20 years after they first came about.
Yeah, they seem to have found a better solution because you see those pictures and videos of the subways from the 80s and they just look like they're just
graffiti.
Covered. Yeah, covered.
Yeah. And just a mural.
And it's not that doesn't exist now, but it doesn't exist as much or nearly as much.
Everyone's far too busy breaking the television screens in the stations.
Right. And so we open a shot of the subway while the song Love of My Life, an ode to hip hop by Erykah Badu featuring Common is playing.
And then we see Sanaa Lathan. I will have to say, I have never exactly known how to pronounce her name. It was pointed out that it's simply Sinatra without the tra.
Well, I Googled to make sure, and there I found a clip of her pronouncing her name. And it's
gotcha.
Yeah, and it's actually exactly how I thought it would be pronounced, because my brother's name is Nathan. So I was like, okay. And two A's, for some reason, to me, felt like Sanaa and Sanaa Lathan.
I don't know why I used to, when I would see her name, I would sing something like a Sanaa Lathan, something like a Sanaa Lathan.
I don't know why
that's what always come to my head.
Yeah, what do you know her mostly from?
I know her from many things. I will say, and you know, it'll be a thing that I mention at the end, I did see her on Broadway in A Raisin in the Sun.
Mm.
And she was, I mean, that cast was stupid. That cast was like Audra McDonald and Felicia Rashad. Like, it was an insane cast. We saw it on Tony Sunday, even, my friend.
Wow. I know you always go into what they were in later, so I'm sorry for interrupting.
That's okay. And is she, in this moment, I was like, is she, I think she's cleaning up an office.
Right. I said, we see someone unpacking boxes. Looks like lots of hip hop memorabilia. Then we hear a woman's voice. I said, presumably Sid's, because I found out her name, asking about hip hop.
Yeah. So I will say, since I do now look back, she'd been a working actress. Sanaa Lathan had been a working actress for many years, but I feel like 2000's Love and Basketball was her big breakout. Mm. Like, I remember that being a big thing. We also do establish the multi-screen format here, that we're going to have more than one thing happening. That was a very, it's very of its time. And I will say that the director and the editor talked about how they were trying to make the movie look like a hip hop video. Like, they were trying to make it look, or at least feel like hip hop, where you're seeing more than one thing at one time. And we're seeing like the hip hop cassettes. And then I even like their names are sort of graffiti. And mm-hmm. then like the title, Brown Sugar, is graffiti on a wall in the background. And yeah, we hear voice on tape. And she says that she starts every interview the same way, with, when did you fall in love with hip hop? And we could spend an entire episode talking about the number of hip hop artists that we see in the next little bit. It starts with Kool G Rap. And then we have Russell Simmons. And there's just many quick responses. And it's, you know, it's one refers, I do like that one of them refers to the love of hip hop as an arranged marriage, as though it was predetermined. Like, I do like that.
Yeah, it's a really great, what I liked about this movie is it felt like, I don't like that someone said you wouldn't know anything about hip hop or you couldn't understand it unless you knew hip hop, because I actually felt like this movie taught me so much. Like, I felt like there was such, I don't know, it did a really good job of using real people in the world intermixed with actors to kind of give almost a documentary feel at times.
Sure. And part of what I'm going to call him now, Director Rick, because I do feel like I'm slightly butchering his last name every time I say it. He did talk about how this was to show what the film was about right from the start, that it was about the love of hip hop, partly from those who were making it, that basically, like, from day to day, he'd be like, oh, hey, Common, come and sit down for this interview. Oh, hey, come in. Like, he would just have random people on set that would be like, hey, let's just talk about this. Mm. And then they sort of used it to show how people had all these different thoughts and all these, but like, so many of them say the same names over and over again. And this sort of the moments of like, we are really talking about the foundations of hip hop. I will also say this really starts our jump cuts. And I later had a note where I'm like, is my DVD skipping? Because I wasn't
too
100% sure. Okay. And they do address it. They do talk about it. And I'll talk about it more when we get into it.
Yeah. Because my TV sometimes does do this thing where it's like, because it's slow, it'll just stop for a second. So I thought that's what's happening. But it is their style of filming where they kind of freeze it and then jump to something else. Also, there's so many people they bring up, but there's a moment with Jermaine Dupri, who we just saw on the Super Bowl.
Correct. Yeah.
So Usher had it, yes, with Jermaine Dupri, and everyone, well, not everyone, but there are people on the internet who are younger that was like, is that CeeLo Green? And I was like, no, you kids.
Good guess, young people. Mm-hmm. And then we flash back to July 18th, 1984. This is the day she fell in love with hip hop.
Exactly 364 days before I was born.
Gotcha. Well, that's important to note.
It is, yeah.
This is Aaliyah Hill. I'm not sure if I'm saying her name right, but she was actually playing Nala on Broadway right around this same time.
Wow. Probably Aaliyah.
Probably. And then we have a lot of breakdancing on cardboard. And I will say it definitely brought back memories of my childhood and my brother, Joe, and certain cousins in the basement on like the cement floor with cardboard pieces, like practicing their breakdance. Should be pointed out, all very Caucasian, but like they all wanted to be breakdancers. It was like the coolest thing to do in the world.
Did anyone make it?
I feel like my brother could do the headspin. He could actually do the thing where like, I didn't know how you weren't breaking your neck, but he could actually get some movement going. A lot of wrecked socks trying to do the moonwalk also.
There were a few kids in my high school that could do the head spin. And I remember me being me, of course, anytime we had these middle school dances and they were called extravaganzas. And they,
sure they were.
They were not ball culture by any means. The category is middle school realness.
Awkwardness, yeah.
No, they were immediately after school. They lasted about 2 hours. They were in the cafeteria. You could buy pizza for $1. But anytime dance circles would happen, there were a few kids that were actually very good at breakdancing that could do the head spins. And I always had to walk away because I was so nervous someone was going to hurt themselves.
it is kind of scary to watch.
Yeah.
And then we have some kind of battle maybe going on, and she's trying to see what's happening. And a boy invites her to join him up on maybe a picnic table. This is Mark John Jeffries. I just want to say his first role was as Isaiah in the film Losing Isaiah. Very first film, okay. Title role.
Well, yeah. This movie has a ton of really, really talented people in it. And yeah, the rappers rapping in a circle are Slick Rick, Dana Dane, and Dougie Fresh. So I think in this moment, I think they're trying to be like, this is how these people would get their start.
Maybe? Yes. And they talk about in the commentary also how it was both funny and fun, because like these were all people who were now, you know, 15 years, 16 years, 17 years older
right.
than the versions of the characters that they're playing of themselves. But they were kind of like, who cares? Like,
right. Because they don't them do
were
a that, job.
None of them were the right size or the right age.
No.
They're like, just go and be yourselves. And they do have such familiar voices. Even for me, who doesn't really know hip hop, was like, oh, I know that voice. Like, I recognize who that person is, even though I don't recognize who that person is.
Yeah, that was funny because in my mind, I was thinking, are they playing themselves? Because they did not do any trying to make them look younger.
Nope.
No. There was no, like, this is us aging happening here. Yeah, and that this was the moment that she fell in love with hip-hop. We now find out that we are in the Bronx.
Yes.
And also that these men will go on to be very successful.
Yes.
And that the boy's name is Dre.
And listen, there was a half a minute, and that's not even true. There was probably a half an hour that I'm like, I'm going to find this playground in the South Bronx. I had to give up. There are so many playgrounds in the South Bronx. So that's all. It's a small playground in the South Bronx.
Yeah.
Good enough. And yeah, as she grew, hip-hop grew with her.
Mm-hmm. And we are in the modern day, and we see she is writing something, and she was writing all of the words that she was just saying. So we see the things that she was typing, a la Carrie Bradshaw, on the screen.
And there's a party going on for her. It's her mm-hmm. last day at this job. We find out that it is the LA Times.
Yep, and her assistant comes in, and we find out that it's the last day the job, there's a party in the office, and that Dre is on the line.
And not that this is surprising, because it obviously would have been more expensive to fly to LA to do this, but everything in this was filmed somewhere in New York. This was actually an office building on Broadway and Spring that they just had to make sure you couldn't see anything recognizable across the street.
Right.
But it was filmed in Manhattan.
And Dre is in a boardroom at Millennium Records, and one of the people in the boardroom is Sterling K. Brown, I think.
He's not.
Oh.
And we'll get to why I know he's not later. I did the same thing because he's listed in the credits. And I literally was like, which one is Sterling K. Brown? Why can't I find him?
I couldn't find him either. And I just assumed that like maybe his back was to the camera.
No,
or maybe
I love
he was
you brought
off
it up.
Screen.
I'm leaving it in not to make you look dumb, but because I did the exact same thing. And I only know he's not there because I have the DVDs.
Okay. Does he happen later?
He does happen later. So we'll get to him a little bit later.
But he doesn't have a big part.
He doesn't have a part in the film.
Okay, great. Okay, cool. So I'm not, because I
you
am
didn't
like,
miss anything.
Because I am a Sterling K. Brown fan. So
yeah,
I was,
for sure.
I was like, he's supposed to be here.
You're like, he must. I honestly, I said the same thing. I'm like, he's in there somewhere. And I only know he's not, once again, because I have the DVD.
Okay, perfect.
So yeah, Taye Diggs playing Andre Romulus Ellis. You know, I obviously, like, Taye Diggs was part of the original cast of Rent. And very, very few musicals have launched as many stars as that original Broadway cast of Rent. He was in the film How Stella Got Her Groove Back. He was in The Wood, which was written by Michael Elliott, who we talked about earlier,
mm-hmm.
The Best Man. And for the record, Sanaa was in those last two films as well. So they'd already worked together on a couple of occasions. And this is an interesting scene. And we'll just start it and see what happens. But she immediately clocks that he's on a speaker, even though he says it's just him. And yeah, we see we're at Millennium Records and we're in an office space in Williamsburg that they found. You can see Manhattan in the background. And she makes him apologize for being an ass. Do we think this is just part of their like banter where he calls?
Yeah, I wasn't sure. Yeah, she makes him apologize for being arrogant and we find out they're just friends. But I don't. Yeah, I think it's just to kind of give us an idea that they're friends who kind of have this banter back and forth.
Apologize first. You know the routine. Say it. I'm sorry.
I'm sorry for being a self-centered ass.
Actually, change that to impatient, arrogant ass.
Okay, you can't be adding extras here, Sid.
Tell me something. Does Simon know you went to bed till you were 12?
Hey, okay.
That's kind of not cool.
You don't want to say that in front of Wendell Pierce.
Wendell Pierce. I have him down here somewhere. Yeah, Wendell Pierce is here. We'll talk more about him a little bit later. Mm-hmm. Yeah, she has his review and she'll put it at the bottom of the stack. So we found out that she wrote for the LA Times and is now going to be the editor of Double XL is how they say it. So it's not just XXL, it's Double XL. This is a real magazine mm-hmm. that was founded in 1997, for the record, yeah. And she thinks he's got another hit on his hands. And yeah. we find out that he's on a first name basis with Russell Simmons.
At this moment, what I thought was happening was that Dre is the executive at Millennium and Sid was reviewing the album that he produced and maybe Simon was the artist. Like that's, I wasn't sure who, sure. Like, who was what.
That's perfectly fine.
Right, yeah. And she asks if he'll be home in time for Russell Simmons' party, the Def Jam party. And this was at a time when there were these big studios in New York City, which are not like Bad Boy Entertainment. Remember that?
Sure.
I mean, actually, if you're in New York
City, I walk by that empty building often. Yeah. I'm like, oh, hey, empty Bad Boy building.
Yeah, and it still has the...
Still has the Bad Boy logo on it.
Right.
Still, yeah.
Yeah, and that's not there anymore, clearly, because it's empty. Is Def Jam still in New York City?
I honestly have no idea. I don't think so. I think most of those are in LA now. There are still studios in New York, but there aren't as many like big labels, I don't think. And now we're in New York and we, you know, I'm going to kind of say some of the voiceovers that go along because we have, for some of us, hip hop was our first friend, the first to understand. And we have a shot of the Flatiron building. And now we're on a rooftop pool that I think was Richard Wright's and also featured in the film Hitch.
Really?
Yeah, this is that pool. This is the pool that Richard got naked and dove into. I'm like 99% sure. And we're going to confirm it. Not confirm, but come close to confirming it a little bit later.
Def Jam Records currently operates as a standalone label within the Universal Music Group. And the Universal Music Group, I believe,
is in the universe.
Ooh. Is in New York City. I guess for me, I was just thinking of that time when there were all those like reality shows shooting in New York City all the time. And it just felt like everything was in New York City. And now that doesn't happen as much.
Yeah. Yeah. Now it's Queen Latifah as Francine. You know, I forget that she had like an entire TV series.
Queen Latifah?
Yeah, Living Single was like, I think it ran for over 100. I know that it exists. And for some reason, I think of her as like a rapper who then got into singing, who then got into movies, which is all true. But I forget that there was that huge era of her career where she was on a TV show.
She has this album that she released and she does a cover of Sugar in My Bowl. And I think it's one of the best covers ever. I mean, she's a great singer.
Well, and we'll get to, you know, I can say this because this happened a few years before this movie. Anyone that knows me well knows one of my very favorite films in the world is a tiny film that no one's seen called Living Out Loud with Holly Hunter and Danny DeVito, in which she sings Lush Life.
Mm.
And does an like that song is so hard.
Yes.
And just an amazing version of that. And I love that film.
Yeah, and also she was in Chicago, the musical.
Just after this. We're not quite there yet.
I think that movie is one of the few movie musicals that worked really well.
As someone who loves movie musicals, I get what you mean. In a way, I feel like that's a movie musical that cheats, but I will also agree that it's maybe the greatest one ever made.
That's Mike Jensen saying, I don't want to agree with you, but I guess I will. Yeah, Francine had to work a double shift to get this night off.
I love that. I want to know where she works. I want to know what restaurant she's at.
Yeah. And people don't understand who don't work in non-salaried work or work in the hospitality industry that's a thing. If you're going on vacation, you will be exhausted before you leave.
Well, and this is probably a Friday or Saturday night. And once again, if people don't work at restaurants or like, oh, it's my birthday on Friday. I'm like, cool, I can't go. That's like the most important night of the week that I work.
Right. I mean, I work in a restaurant now, luckily, where Friday and Saturday nights are busy, but it's kind of like it's not as a big of deal, you know? But people would say like, oh, just take Saturday night off. I'm like, you understand that now I'm paying $200 because I'm going to make that much less money working a Tuesday, you know, to go to this event. Like, you have to think of that. Like, how much do I want to pay to go to your barbecue? Mike.
Right. And so people seem to know who Sid is and that she has influence.
Yeah, everyone is trying to make connections with Sid, which makes sense knowing that she writes for like the hip hop scene and just
Correct.
Came from LA Times.
And she sort of gets out. She doesn't date because she only meets men in the industry.
Mm-hmm.
Did you know who this lady with the pigtails was?
Kimora Lee Simmons?
It's China. So it's like you can see her on the left side of the screen. She has that like big smile and blonde pigtails.
Oh, I thought you were talking about
wrestler China. Yeah.
I thought you were talking about when Russell Simmons walked in with
We are going to, yeah, they're both going to be there as well. But before that, China was just around and basically was like, I want to be in your movie. And they were like, okay, we'll be a part of the party. So there are a lot of people that just sort of like showed up and did these random cameos. And this is one of them.
Yeah. And then Dre shows up with Lisa Todd Wexley.
Yeah. It's Nicole Ari Parker and those streaks. The streaks are just so of a time.
Yes. I had them, the chunky highlights.
Sure. I'm sure that I had them.
Yeah.
And I do like that we talk about from red Solo cups in the Bronx to champagne toast in Soho. So now I'm really certain it's the same rooftop pool.
Yeah, yeah. Did you ever think you'd see the day when hip hop grew up, Kool-Aid parties in the Bronx to champagne toast in Soho? And Dre comes up to Sydney at the bar and orders her a perfect 10. I did not know what that was, but I do
now. I had never heard of this before.
Well, it's a drink that was made for Tanqueray 10. And it's basically a gin martini with a grapefruit peel. I don't know if Tanqueray 10 sponsored this movie.
I don't know either. But yeah, I was kind of like, oh, it's just a gin martini with a grapefruit twist. Okay.
Made with Tanqueray 10.
Cool, cool. And they're very baby and very affectionate. I mean, they're clearly just friends, but those kind of friends who like call each other baby and hug a lot, if that, right. You know. And then we have Reese. And I will say that because I decided to be the me this time and not know who people were, she is credited in IMDb as Reese Ellis. So I was like, wait, are they already married? And they're not. But it's, I suppose, a mild spoiler from IMDb.
Yeah.
And she had been in The Incredibly True Adventure of Two Girls in Love, which I do remember being a kind of a big deal when it first came out. And she was also in Boogie Nights and Remember the Titans, just to sort of like give us a little background on Nicole. And she can't believe that he left her with that man.
And they're complimenting each other, Sydney and Reese, as they meet for the first time. They're getting along well. They're teasing Dre.
Because that's what you do. And it's sort of a funny thing that I understand is just the go-to, that like when you don't know the person, but you both know the same person, the go-to is to make fun of them. That's just kind of how it goes. And I do like the clearing of his throat and like that sounded like male ego. Because we're going to get at least one more of those as we go along. Yeah, I say they seem to get along. And she has to go talk to someone at Arista. And she's amazing and not like the others. And this is where we found out that he has a ring.
And I'm not sure at this point what Reese does, but she works in the industry.
Correct.
But we don't know how.
Yes.
Yeah, Dre pulls out a ring and shows Sydney. He's going to propose to Reese. You can tell in this moment Sydney's a little hurt.
Yeah, and you kind of don't know if it's because she has feelings for him or she's just concerned because, according to her, they've known each other for about 5 minutes.
And he lets her know that he's going to retire the Slow Jams Deluxe Get the Drawers tape. And yeah. Sydney knows what he's talking about. And this, I think, just establishes that they are old friends. But it sounds like a good mixtape. It's got Luther, Sade, Prince.
Yeah. And we're grown-ups. And he's going in. And he shows her the ring and she seems happy. And I will point out, this was filmed on a rooftop in Soho in November.
Well, they are not dressed for that.
Yeah. It was very, very cold out. And the director also talks about how he was talked into this sort of Moroccan theme by the art director, even though to him it felt very strange, and that legitimately a year later, like, that was the theme. Like, any kind of, like, hip-hop, any kind of party, it was all Moroccan theme, so she had her finger on the pulse.
And he says he's gonna go in, and I'm thinking he's going to maybe talk to Russell Simmons, or, like, something with Def Jam, that's what he's nervous about. No, he's literally going to propose right now. In this
right
moment.
Then, right there at the party. Yeah.
He doesn't
Does
get
not
on a
down
knee.
On one knee. No. Yep, I noticed the same thing.
She says yes.
And then I will say we have a really awful cut scene here that I'm so glad they cut.
Oh, cut scene. Okay, I don't know about
yes.
this.
Well, it's the scene that explains why Sterling K. Brown is listed on IMDb.
Okay.
Because he plays someone who works at XXL. And we never see him in the entire... As far as I know, we never see him in the rest of the movie. But he has a speaking role in this scene where he meets Sid outside the office to say there's someone with a gun upstairs.
Crazy ass bros up there whining to the publisher because he didn't get his picture on the front of the magazine. And that besides his face.
And so Sid runs up and it's Method Man, gun out, threatening to kill this guy Charlie, who also is gun out. They're like pointing guns at each other. And he's threatening to kill him because he wanted to be on the cover. And she says, well, this is Charlie. He brought me in. And she kind of encourages them to kill each other.
So now that I think about it, go ahead and shoot him. It'll make my job a lot easier without him over my shoulder. Yeah, this is great. You shoot him. And he's holding a gun, so he probably gets one off at you. You both die. Your album goes triple platinum. Hell, let's face it, Pac and Biggie sold more records dead than alive. And then I have my first big cover story. You. You'll be on the cover just like you want it. Works out for everybody. Well, except you and Charlie will be dead. But I'll be cool. So go ahead, fire away.
You.
And I'm so glad they cut this storyline out, because as you were saying, part of the point of this film was to like show the not violent side, and this scene, they try to play it for laughs, and I guess it is based on a true story of Michael Elliott when he worked at the Source, or was like learning about this world from the Source, that this really did happen there. But I don't care. I'm so glad they cut it out. It's a pretty awful scene, and maybe just even more so in this day and age when there's so much gun violence that I was like, yeah, we cut that out for a good reason.
And this is the second movie that we are talking about that Method Man was in. He was also in Trainwreck, right?
Yes. And now we're going to cut. So now we're going to get to a scene that you do know. And this is with Francine and Sid.
Yeah. Francine is now helping Sydney unpack her new place and quickly pulls out the biggest vibrator I've seen in my entire life.
Yes, from Brookstone.
Yes, it's quick to say it's a massager from Brookstone, which is very Sex and the City.
Very much so. And I will say, watching this the first time, I did have the thought, the editing of this scene is so strange. Like, there are just moments where, like, she's putting a candle down, and then it cuts back to her, and she's on the other side of the room, where I was like, this editing is so odd. So here's what it came down to. They were going to be given an R rating because of how much they talked about this vibrator. And in order to get a PG-13, they had to cut jokes about the vibrator out of the scene. And in so doing, it became a strangely edited scene. And I just have to say, for a film that, once we don't have the gun scene in, has no violence, no sex, no swearing. I mean, there's a little bit. This was going to get an R because of talking about a vibrator? Like, that is the most bizarre reasoning behind an R rating that I think I've ever heard.
Yeah.
But they really wanted the PG-13, so in order to do it, so if you ever watch this again, that's why this is kind of a strangely edited scene.
Okay. Well, Sid is talking about not wanting a man, and then Francine brings up Dre, and Sydney says there was a time when she was at Columbia, so we find out that Sydney went to college in New York City, where he asked if they should be more than friends, and she said no. Also, not for nothing, there is a can of Pepsi One.
Which is all that I can see when I'm watching it. I'm like, because you said, like, was this sponsored by Tanqueray 10? I was like, was this sponsored by Pepsi One?
I just thought of it more as a time capsule.
Sure, and that totally makes sense. But I'm just like, and Pepsi One, right? There's just a very, very well-located can of Pepsi One. And listen, I later on went and watched the trailer for this, and the line is in it. I don't know why the line, you get the buddy and the booty, made me laugh so hard.
I will be using it. Yeah, Francine very wisely says that they should have done it. She gets the best of both worlds, the buddy and the booty.
It made me laugh. It really made me laugh hard. But, you know, it's pointed out, like, relationships break up and people get angry. And we do discover that Francine is divorced and talks to her ex all the time about alimony and the tramp he lives with.
Yeah, they don't have the best relationship, Francine and Terrell. And then we find out that Sid was invited to Reese's bridal tea thing, and she's going to have Francine go pick up a gift for Sid to bring. And at this moment, I thought, do we think it will be a massager?
Immediately. Something dirty.
And is Francine doing this because we're assuming Sid is just really busy with her move and her new job?
I think so as well. And do they refer to each other as cousins here? And I didn't know if that meant they were actual cousins or just sort of a...
Yeah, I wasn't sure if they were friends or cousins. But in something I read about it, in an article I read about the movie, Queen Latifah is credited as playing Sydney's cousin, Francine.
Okay.
So, but
that makes sense.
Yeah, Sydney shows up to the bridal shower with a gift that doesn't look like a vibrator. It looks like a record, mayhaps.
Yeah, we're somewhere in Queens at the bridal tea thing. This was apparently a nursery in Queens just off of 59th Street or the 59th Street Bridge. But I think it was like a nursery that doubled as an event space. I couldn't seem to find it, so I don't know if it still exists or not, but that's where they filmed it. And
that's in Long Island City.
And there's a weird, I don't know, this is just me being a noticer of weird directorial choices. I would think it's strange when we hear a voice from off screen before we see the person, which is how this scene starts. And yeah, Sid brought a present, and she's also like touching sandwiches and then putting them back on the tray.
You don't
Did
like
that bother
that.
You at all?
Yeah. I didn't notice it. I also didn't notice the off-screen talking, but maybe because we're in a post-COVID world, that feels weirder.
Yeah, maybe. And we have a game, and it's like, what is Dre's middle name? And someone guesses fine.
Yeah, this is a very, I mean, I don't know how many bridal or baby showers you've been to, but this is a pretty common thing where it's like, who knows the most about the groom? Guess the baby's weight. That kind of stuff. And I see where this is going. We're going to see that Sydney probably gets everything right. Sydney gets his middle name right. It's Romulus. Aunt Betty is also hot for a man named Romulus. Yeah. I love Aunt Betty.
Yeah.
And Sid is just getting them all right.
Aunt Betty guesses that his favorite drink is a polar bear. Do you know what that is?
No, do you?
It's milk and vodka. Ugh.
I mean, it's basically...
I guess add Kahlua and it's delicious, but...
Right. It's basically a white Russian without Kahlua.
Yeah, I guess so.
But I don't know if I'd want a polar bear. That doesn't... Because the thing about a black Russian is you have the Kahlua, which gives it the chocolatey taste. And then the white Russian, you add the milk, which gives it creamy. But milk and vodka just doesn't sound good.
Yeah, I'm not sure. Anyways, that's what that is. And then, yeah, his favorite drink is Kettle One Up with a twist. But if he's showing off, it's Macallan 25. And I honestly can't tell if Reese is impressed or annoyed. She plays it pretty well of like... kind of giving her snaps, but maybe a little aggravated. And it's kind of, yeah, after we get the favorite song, which is The Bridge is Over by Boogie Down Productions, Sid's not allowed to play anymore.
Yeah, she's done. She got them all right. And then we go to a present opening. Did you notice Sydney's present is the only one not wrapped like everyone else's? They're all wrapped the same. Now, this could be a choice to make Sydney look othered. That could be like the directorial choice. Or it's to say that everyone else bought something off the registry. Because, for example, if you bought a gift from Bed Bath & Beyond from the registry and they wrapped it there, it had that... I think Bed Bath & Beyond always had this white paper with purple paisley on it.
Yeah, I wrote, Sid is the only one who didn't get the blue box memo.
Yeah. So I think it's probably something simple like that, but it just feels like a weird thing to for the props person to do. So I don't know.
Did you notice Sid dropping the strawberry as she was eating it?
No.
Yeah, she goes to take a bite of the strawberry and parts of it falls on the ground. And we start to establish Sydney dropping things.
Okay. What movie was it we were watching where someone couldn't hold anything? Oh, it was...
It was Hitch.
It was Hitch,
but that's because
yeah.
He was, you know, a big, fat, clumsy guy. Right. And I'm like... So I thought it was funny that she kind of made that choice in this, of that she was going to drop things from time to time. And yeah, we have her like shaking the box again, which is just funny every time. And I'm honestly nervous. I'm watching this like, what's in the box?
Well, it's a zipper front leather thong. Nothing about this piece feels comfortable.
No, not at all. So itchy.
I mean, I don't think it's meant to be worn like as your day-to-day
for
underwear.
For very long, yeah.
I don't even think this would be underwear you would wear if it was laundry day and you had nothing left. I think this is just to maybe be put on to be put off.
Kind of thing. Yeah, exactly. But I will say that Reese nicely plays it off. Reese has her thing of like, this will go great with my whip, and kind of does a playful thing. And I am still in that place of like, okay, Reese seems like a nice person. Like Reese seems like she's being as cool as she possibly can in the situation.
And now Sid and Dre are in the park saying she was embarrassed, but she's still hungry from the shower and the tea sandwiches, and they're eating hot dogs. They're in Central Park at the mall, I believe.
Yeah, it's Poets Walk. And I do notice that she's already finished her hot dog. And I wonder if that was a choice that Sanaa was like, I don't need to eat a hot dog, because it kind of cuts to her like wiping her mouth as though she's just like taken the final bite.
Okay, maybe.
Or maybe she was just that hungry and it's gone already.
Yeah, for continuity purposes for the film. Or maybe it was to show that she's so comfortable around Dre, she's going to eat the hot dog first.
And it was pointed out, it was funny how like on the commentary, the director and editor are laughing uproariously about cutting from that thong to a hot dog, which then I was like, oh, I guess that's funny. I didn't even really get that connection, but I suppose that is something happening there.
Yeah, I didn't get it either. And Dre is saying that whenever he's with Reese, they go to fancy spots with white tablecloths and lots of silverware, but he just wants one of these bad boys, a.k.a. a hot dog.
Yes.
Yeah. And then he says that, you know, Reese, and it's the first time we get the name of the movie, she's brown sugar, a woman who is classy and refined and hella, hella sexy, but not a hoe. He's saying she is a freak in the bedroom, and Sydney's like, okay, thank you.
And then the girls in the videos are Cyndi Lauper honeys. They just like to have fun. And I did want to be like, they just want to have fun. Let's quote Cyndi Lauper correctly.
Well, he says with their breasts all up to here. I don't know. That doesn't feel like a very, like, Cyndi Lauper isn't the person that I would immediately jump to when I'm talking about people just being, like, I don't know, like with their boobs out everywhere. But I think it's just for the sure. line. They just want to have fun. Like, I think that's right. exactly why they say it. Yeah, but Dre would tap that as well.
And I will say another way that they had to get a PG-13 is that they had to cut the word ass.
Oh, and just say tap that.
Correct.
But Dre does have this moment, which I really like. Dre's just reminding Sid that men are stupid and simple.
You know what? I think there's something to talk about here. And I do think that it's a thing that does get men and women in trouble from time to time. Because first of all, we're out shopping somewhere and she is talking about being best friends with a man and how it lets her see all the dumb things that he has to say. But yeah, I do think there's something to be said about that. That, like, yeah, you just said it, that men are simple and that women can be too complicated.
Yeah, and I don't mean this to, like, say anything bad about men and men are idiots and this and that. But I've had multiple, like, cis heterosexual men tell me on numerous occasions, not that I've even dated, but friends of mine being like, you guys care way too much. Like, we are pretty simple when it comes to a lot of things.
Right. Or like women being like, what does it mean? What does he mean by this? And it's like, he probably just means exactly what he said.
Yeah, he probably just means exactly what he says. And when he says it, believe him. There is no, you know, I'm currently dating someone who is honest to a fault, so I don't really have to worry about a lot of stuff. Like, he will tell me exactly what he thinks all the time, and not in a bad way. I'm just saying, like, in general. And we've even had this conversation where I've just been like, are you really, like, it's that simple? It's just boobs. They're like, yeah, it's just boobs.
Right.
That's all it is.
And she asks what type she is. And he says that she could probably be in the video and that encourages her. I wrote encourages her to twerk. I'm not sure that twerk was even a term at the time.
Maybe. Yeah, it emerged from the bounce music scene of New Orleans in 1990.
Oh, wow. Okay. So it had been around.
Yeah. Yeah. Twerking has been around since the early 1990s. But I think, once again, like, okay, it has been around. I mean, this is something that we could talk about for another episode. And we are not the ones that should be talking about it, but it says, since this article I'm reading right now from Pop Sugar, when did twerking go mainstream? Since Miley Cyrus's infamous 2013 MTV Amaze performance, twerking has become a mainstream phenomenon. That same year, the term was added to the Oxford English Dictionary. Yet, just as with most things within Black culture, the validity and popularity of twerking were only established once a pop star performed it on MTV. And in reality, the culture and history of twerking is centuries old and dates back to the Ivory Coast of Africa. So,
well, listen, we're shining a light.
No, I mean, it's just, it is like I said, like, we could go on and on and on. Even, you know, we see it happening with the ballroom scene. We see it happening with so many things, like people taking from Black culture. And this is just another moment where that happens.
And now Sid is choosing something for the mantle. And he selects something and the sales lady says it's a compromise piece and thinks that they must be newlyweds. And I like Sid's correcting her with she's like, a please.
Yes. Yeah. She says it's a couple, that couples love that piece. And yeah, Sydney says please. And Dre doesn't like it, but she reminds him.
I love it. Doesn't like it.
You ain't shit.
I love it. He says, why do you say it like that? Like, I ain't shit. And she just goes, because you ain't.
Yeah. You ain't shit. And then Dre gets a message on a Palm Pilot. Of sorts. I don't know what it is, but it looks like this, a Palm Pilot like phone. By the way, we never see this particular device ever again.
Yeah, he switches up to is it a flip phone later or something a little bit
nicer? Much less nice than this, that he has to sign someone tonight. It's open mic night at Webster Hall. And Dre is now trying to convince her to come with him.
And she has to get up in the morning, so she can't, but he convinces her. And we are going to go to multi-screen, but I do want to point out that once again, in this scene, as this is happening, she picks something up and drops something and has to pick it up. So once again, I know for a fact that it wasn't in the script because director Rick says it wasn't. I don't know if it was a conscious choice that Sanaa made or if it was just like a thing that kept happening, but I like it. I like the little touch that it gives it.
It's a very simple thing it's like that simple thing that happens a lot in these movies, especially from around this time, to kind of show, like, I'm just a normal girl.
Sure.
You know, like, I'm not Reese. I'm not this refined woman. I drop things. I think maybe that's kind of what we're happening.
So there you go. For $4 a month, you get access to everything we've recorded, and we put out new material pretty much every week. You can find us on the Patreon app by searching We Couldn't Help But Wonder, the link on our Instagram, or through our website, wecouldn'thelpbutwonder.com. You'll also get instructions on how to receive the episodes wherever you already listen to podcasts. Hope you join us. Okay, I think everything's fine. It's just my computer screen's gone to black.
Oh, that sounds fine. So now Sid is in Dre and Sid is in Dre. Nope. Let's Google twerk invention. It okay.